The Rock! And people were about, oh, look, it's The Rock. Let's buy it. Oh, you mean unlike that rock right over there that you can just pick up? Oh, well, this is a pet rock. Oh. Oh, was in the movie Blazing Saddles, one of my favorite movies, when Gene Wilder was just trying to calm down Cleavon Little, who was mad because people were...
This is the Quality News Network. It is the worst internal fighting in Lebanon since the civil war more than 30 years ago. Lebanese airstrikes continue to hammer a suspected al-Qaeda stronghold in a Palestinian refugee camp near Tripoli. Yesterday, clashes killed at least 27 soldiers and 20 militants. 34 civilians within the camp are reported dead. In Gaza today, an Israeli airstrike killed 8. Israel pounding Palestinian targets over the weekend killed at least 24 and wounded 16, most of them civilians. The strikes are in response to a week of Hamas missile attacks into Israel, which injured more than a dozen. Since Friday, 15 U.S. soldiers have died in Iraq, most of them by bombs. That brings the number of Americans killed there this month to at least 71. The search for 3 kidnapped soldiers missing for more than a week continues. The U.S. military says they have information at least 2 of the 3 soldiers are still alive and being held captive by an al-Qaeda splinter group. This morning, an ambush in southern Afghanistan killed at least 25 militants. Yesterday, a suicide bomber in a popular marketplace in the east of the country killed 14 and wounded 31. President Bush and the NATO Secretary General met yesterday in President Crawford, Texas ranch to discuss the situation in Afghanistan. 2 scheduled topics, the resurgence of the Taliban and increasing civilian deaths by NATO bombers. In Mumbai, India, 4 policemen were sentenced to 6 years in prison for their roles in the 1993 bomb blast there that killed 257 people. The men were found guilty of assisting terrorists. On Capitol Hill, senators today will debate a president-supported immigration bill which could legalize many of the 12 million illegal immigrants now living and working in the U.S. The bill also beefs up border security. Rain and a drop in temperatures helped control fires this weekend in Arizona and New Jersey. Drought conditions contributed to a greater than usual number of fire outbreaks throughout the U.S.
Hello, I'm CHP Officer Felix Isararas. Law enforcement officers throughout the state are committed to removing drunk drivers from California roadways before they kill or injure themselves, or worse, an innocent victim. Right now, local law enforcement and the CHP are conducting DUI checkpoints to find drunk drivers and keep California roads safe.
Always designate a sober driver. And if you see a drunk driver on the road, call 911. A message from the Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol.
Remember the time you almost volunteered to work in a soup kitchen? Or when you almost visited the Veterans Hospital? Or when you almost brought dinner to your neighbor with AIDS? Remember all the times you almost helped, almost gave? Well, it's only human, this almost giving. But the truth is, it's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give, give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
A humpback whale and her calf are heading back to sea after spending almost a week wandering up the deep shipping channel to Sacramento. Marine biologists say the whales appear to have been injured by a boat's propeller. With the number of wildfires increasing in the West, insurance companies are threatening to cancel policies unless homeowners perform mandatory safety requirements. The companies are requiring policyholders to clear brush, cut down trees, and replace roofs with fireproof materials. Alltel will be acquired by U.S. investment funds Texas Pacific and Goldman Sachs. The price for the nation's 5th largest wireless network is estimated at $27.5 billion. NEC posted an annual profit of $247 million, reversing a loss reported last year. The Japanese high-tech company credits restructuring. A new leader in women's health care will be created when Hologic acquires SciTech for more than $6 billion in cash and stock. The combined company will be the nation's largest in screening, diagnosis, and therapeutic medicines for women. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.11 a barrel. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 14 points, NASDAQ up 4, S&P 500 up 1. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
right.
11,
and most of
11,
and amps then go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up for the beginning of another week. It's Monday. I hope you all are doing well, and we got heaps of stuff to get through today. And I have to thank Bob Kincaid for the first thing that we're going to deal with today. And it's something that I have to say, to my own lacking, I had not taken notice of whatsoever. Van Jones had a piece last week on the 17th at the Huffington Post that when I first saw the headline, I was going, huh? And then I read the piece and I went, uh-huh, right, okay. And it's entitled The Unbearable Whiteness of Green. And I'll tell you, I think part of the reason why I didn't see what was obvious is because I'm not in the States at the moment. And the other part is because, well, I'm just a stupid white guy. It's amazing how the obvious can be thrown in your face. But starts off saying, once again this year, the spring season brought a flood of green-themed magazines to supermarket checkout stands and airport news racks all over the country. And once again, the faces of non-white, non-affluent Americans were almost entirely missing. Our new environmental movement is rapidly gaining visibility and momentum, and that is very good news. Life or death ecological issues finally are starting to get the attention they so urgently deserve, and we can all celebrate that. But now we would be wise to start paying closer attention to the kind of coverage that we environmentalists are getting, because I see a disturbing pattern of exclusivity that is starting to set in. And that kind of elitism sows the seeds of a very dangerous populist backlash down the line. To see what I mean, just flip through the pages of Vanity Fair's recent green issue, the one with Leonardo DiCaprio, and that cute polar bear cub on the cover. It says, vanity not fair. Where are Americans of color? Now, count on the non-white Americans. Now count the non-white Americans in the whole magazine. Okay, now try to find the working-class environmentalists, the ones trying to protect their kids from pollution at the fence line. Go ahead, keep looking. See what I mean? I'm sure that Vanity Fair and the others mean well, but no one is doing our new green movement any favors by continually portraying it solely as a playground of white affluent eco-elite. To turn this country around environmentally, we're going to need supermajorities in every demographic group. It would be easy for green proponents to get cocky and be overconfident now. It would be easy to say, why bother working for race and class diversity when the environmental movement is growing faster now than at any time in its history? Such misguided thinking would be trading short-term gain for long-term pain. This year, right now, is precisely the smart time to start worrying about the future anti-green backlash. If we let our movement be portrayed as solely a white thing, it will be easier for demagogues to forge an alliance between polluters and the poor to derail our success. Do you think I'm being paranoid? Well, then please heed a cautionary tale from California that supposed leader in all things green. And there's a bunch of information here I did not realize. California provides cautionary tale to eco-elite. Everyone loves to brag on Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger for signing our global warming legislation, but nobody talks about the fact that a few months earlier, the majority of California voters here rejected a clean energy ballot measure. That's right. Elected officialdom might be willing to take major green steps, but 6 months ago, when Californians got to speak up in the ballot booth, ordinary people said no. Many states and nations have similar excise... It is important that we study this defeat and pull out the lessons going forward. The idea for Prop 87 was brilliant in its simplicity. California would start taxing the oil and gas that we extract from our soil and shores, and those dollars would go into a huge clean energy research and technology fund. Many states and nations have similar excise taxes, but California would have been alone in dedicating the revenues to inventing alternatives to carbon-based energy sources. Had it passed, money from oil would have been used to find a replacement for oil. It was a brilliant idea, and at first the measure was polling off the charts. Silicon Valley and Hollywood put $40 million on the table to ensure the measure passed. Al Gore and Bill Clinton campaigned for it. Victory was certain. But in the end, Californians voted the measure down. Why? Because big oil convinced ordinary Californians that the price tag for them would be too high for them to bear. The oil and gas industry warned that the tax would be passed along to consumers, pushing gas and home fuel costs through the roof and hurting the poorest Californians. It was a predictable line of attack. It was also a false argument. Our local oil and gas prices are fundamentally set by the huge global energy market. A teeny local excise tax in one state, in one country, would have a minuscule or negligible impact on California consumers. And to the contrary, the benefits of a shift to cleaner energy would have helped the poorest in the state, significantly improving both their health and their wealth. For one thing, disproportionate numbers of low-income people live near oil refineries and other sources of dirty energy pollution. As a result, they suffer from higher rates of cancer, asthma, and other illnesses. Largely uninsured, they then pay through the nose for inferior medical care. In other words, the dirty energy economy is literally killing poor people. A switch to cleaner energy would save untold lives. Beyond that, a clean energy economy actually is more labor-intensive, meaning it creates more jobs. After all, somebody has to install and maintain all those solar panels, build all the wind farms, construct the wave farms, weatherize those millions of homes and office buildings. I was reading this yesterday, and I just kind of was stuck halfway between a minor epiphany and wanting to smack my head into the wall for having not realized that this was going on. But then again, I'm not there. It's one of the problems that I have sometimes, is that I'm not actually in the States to see how out of balance this stuff can be. And the other difference here in Australia, the Aboriginals have always been one with their environment. And they have been leading the cause of environmentalism in this country. So they get a little bit more face time. And so I think that's why maybe I didn't get the perception of what was happening in the States. So we're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, I'm going to finish this up. I'm actually going to read the rest of it. There's not that much left, but I think it's just fantastic, and the comment stream is just brilliant. So stick around, folks. You're with Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice, and we will be right back after this.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office 1-888-384-5249.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the inside scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Polar bears live in the Arctic, on the ice.
But the ice is melting because of global warming.
Some polar bears have to swim so far they drown. Baby bears have died.
When I'm old, when I'm 45, all the bears could be gone.
Grown-ups should do something.
If you're a grown-up, go to polarbearsos.org now. You can make sure polar bears are protected under the Endangered Species Act.
Please help them.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And I've been reading this Van Jones post from the Huffington Post at the end of last week about the unbearable whiteness of the green movement. And he continues on saying, not making eco-populist arguments hurts us. So there was a strong eco-populist argument to be made for Proposition 87. Switching to clean energy would have cost individual Californians little, but given working people improved health and better jobs. But the campaign, led by the eco-elite, did not make these arguments with any force. Instead, Prop 87 commercials yammered on about energy independence, which polling firms said was the best message. Maybe so, but in some demographics, people need that message to be bolstered by some reassurance on the kitchen table issues, and it never was. Seeing the obvious opening, the polluters pounced. Big Oil ran full-page ads in practically every African-American newspaper in the state. The ads showed a black mom looking aghast at fuel prices while she tried to fill up her car. An NAACP official vocally opposed the measure, fearing economic damage from her to her constituency. Oy! And the scare tactics didn't alarm only black Californians. Across the state, the initially sky-high poll numbers for the initiative proved surprisingly fragile. The support for the measure was completely hollow, and in the end, the biggest clean energy ballot measure in the country went down to defeat in California. And he says the eco elite cannot win by itself. The defeat of Proposition 87 should sound a clear warning for all of us in the effort to birth a green post-carbon economy. The eco elite cannot win major change alone, not even in the Golden State. To change our laws and culture, the green movement must attract and include the majority of all people, not just the majority of affluent people. We must make it plain to the country that we envision a clean energy future in which everyone has a place and a stake. One way to do that is to speak to the economic and health opportunities that ecological solutions will also provide. Another way is to show the many, many people of color and working-class Americans who are actively engaged in environmental struggles. Fortunately, the country has an abundance of such heroes or sheroes. But if nearly every special green issue excludes them, we are essentially handing millions and millions of people over to the polluters. We are essentially saying to Big Oil, please organize all of these people against everything green. Thanks. The nation has already passed a certain tipping point in the eco-consciousness, but we should never underestimate the danger of a major backlash. We can easily head one off just by making sure that green includes all colors. And I think that this is just a brilliant piece. And, you know, it's... You know, it's in the poor communities, you know, where you know, low-income housing is usually next to the refineries, is usually next to the power generation plants, is usually next to where, you know, companies dump crap into rivers. And it's usually those, you know, low-income moms and dads that are out there fighting for their kids on the ground right there. And I think Van has a brilliant point here that we could end up having a backlash on this issue if we don't make sure that the media portrays all those involved. And this is, you know, me talking about this, I feel a little bit you know, kind of, you know, dumb, arrogant white guy. Which I am a dumb, arrogant white guy. but that's because I was born in America. And the more we portray that this is an issue for that affects everyone, the more people will get on board, wouldn't you think? It has to be, this is a win-win thing to keep in mind. And I suggest going to the Huffington Post and having a read. I've read the whole thing, but read it again, and leave Van your comments, because I think that this is some really, really great stuff. But before I run out of time, I want to get on to today's track of the day. Now, last week I played a track, the Pearl Jam track Jeremy, when we've been talking about the issues of violence in our society. And for those of you who caught Friday's show, you know that my good mate Scott Barry was here, and we were I kind of got him on air for a little bit here and there, and I told him the story about what happened to Ferg. And before I could even tell him that I played Pearl Jam, he mentioned a song that I cannot believe I didn't think of. And so to make up for this oversight, I'm going to play it tonight. And if there's any track ever that I know of that really speaks to this bizarre cycle of violence that we have in American society, this is it. So without further ado, listen to this lyric closely, and it's very clear. You should be able to hear it without any problem. Listen to it's a great story, and it's a terrible story. It's a difficult song to listen to. However, karma does come back on the baddie. But yet, it just proves the cycle of violence doesn't end until the blood is flowing. And this is one of the things that is purely just... It's where our society is unbelievably ill. So without further ado, the disposable heroes of hypocrisy and language of violence. Roll it, Bob.
They didn't hear him screaming, they didn't hear him pleading. They took what they wanted and then Jack Horner. The victim makes things simpler. It's like breathing with a respirator. It eases the conscience of even the most conscious and calculating violator. The power of words, don't take it for granted. When you hear a man ranting, don't just read the lips. Be more sublime than this. Put everything in context. Here's just a tale of rough justice in a land where there's no justice at all. Who is really the victim? Or are we all the cause, a victim of it all? The eyelids drop. You won't hear the screaming until it stops. You won't see the face through the eyelids drop. You won't hear the screaming until it stops.
President Bush isn't listening to us.
It's time to end the war.
Congress passed a plan to end it.
And bring our troops home.
But the president vetoed it.
We want Congress to know
we are with you.
Don't back down to President Bush.
Send him the same bill again and again.
We the people will stand with you. Because stopping a president who believes he can do no wrong
takes people with courage to do what's right.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wide Wally and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. So there was Tony Blair bidding farewell to Bush at the White House on Thursday, a pair of war makers taking one last bow together before history measures their hubris and records their blunders. The mystery about the couple was never Bush, but Blair. Why did this intelligent leader saddle up with the Texas cowboy? Even as Blair bids farewell, it's still kind of hard to figure out. Maybe he wanted to play Margaret Thatcher to Bush's Ronald Reagan. Maybe he wanted to play Winston Churchill against the great evil of terrorism, which is not, however, akin to the Nazi threat, much as Blair and Bush try to make it out to be. Maybe he wanted to bask in the refracted and bygone glory of empire. Or maybe he was infected with a bug of messianic religiosity that is unrebuttable by rational thought or democratic debate. Or maybe it's just a character flaw, as Blair kneels before the more powerful, whether it's the Queen of England or the President of the United States. Whatever the biographers and historians ultimately conclude about Blair's motivations, his decision to charge along with Bush into Iraq will forever stain that reputation of his. It was a decision that he was still defending on Thursday, even as events have proven that decision to be so terribly wrong. And all of Blair's legendary gift of gab cannot now make it right. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robert Sunday. After time, and it goes back for years. You know, let's talk a minute about his business ventures. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breached that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, they did.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yeah, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Listen to it. Sonically, kind of a bit of a challenge, and lyrically, it's definitely a challenge. But there's that lead up to that chorus gets me every time. Dehumanizing the victim makes things simpler. It's like breathing with a respirator. It eases the conscience of even the most conscious of calculating violator. And, you know, there's the when the two violent episodes are described, there's that crazy siren-like sample that goes on, and I mean, it makes my skin crawl. But I think it's just a brilliant bit of writing, and arranging. It just absolutely blows me away. But I have to move on. This is just absolutely... This angered me. Gail sent this to me via StumbleUpon today, and I do believe that Gene, our news ninja, has added a link to the show post for today. I would like everybody to go and... add to this petition. Alert! Another sneak attack on organic standards. USDA to allow more conventional ingredients in organics. It says, the USDA has announced a controversial proposal with absolutely no input from consumers to allow 38 new non-organic ingredients in products bearing the USDA organic seal. Most of the ingredients are food colorings derived from plants that are supposedly not commercially available in organic form, but at least three of the proposed ingredients, backed by beer giant Anheuser-Busch and pork and food processors, represent a serious threat to organic standards and have raised the concerns of the Organic Consumers Association. Now, here's the thing. In the list, they have hops that they want to add to the list. And it says hops, and the petition says hops should not be included on the national list in such general terms. Only specific low supply varieties should be listed. Although organic hops is in high demand, there are over a dozen varieties of organic hops on the market. Now, why is Anheuser-Busch even bothered with this? Bloody Budweiser is made with rice. Sake beer. But some of the other things that they want to put on are things like fish oils, and also lemongrass, rice starch, beet juice, and whey protein concentrate. All things that cannot be, verified as being really organic. And, you know, this is always the classic. This is always the classic move. You put up a standard, and... The big corporations that really don't care about the standard just want the good press. So they want to lower the standard that everybody else wants to live by so that they can get the appearance of being something that they're not. And thank you to those in the chat room who've already gone and signed the petition. And please email this one around because, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that slides by and ends up taking the power of knowledge away from us. And, you know, these are the, these kind of standards, I'm sorry, there is no room for playing around with these standards. It's either organic or it's not. And if it's not, you cannot just change the guidelines so that suddenly it now can be labeled as. You know, have the appearance of. Or we want to act like we are. Sorry, if you can't make the grade, too damn bad. You can't have the happy little sticker or whatever it is. You know, first it's, you know, you can't label something as being genetically modified. It's now illegal in the United States and here in Australia to label things as being genetically modified because it's unfair to the other producers somehow. So then people come up with, you know, then you have things like these, you know, these organic standards. And companies that have no interest in being organic want to fudge the rules so that they can be labeled as such. Going straight back to the Walmart non-organics labeled as organic, and they just couldn't care less as long as they sell it. You know, the other one is, you know, McDonald's making all their big noise a while back about how they were putting a veggie burger and, you know, changing the oils that the chips are that the French fries are done in so that they can be good for vegetarians, but actually that was all a lie. The veggie burgers contained bone meal, and there was still pig fat in the fries. They get busted for it. They say they're going to fix it. They lie. They just continue doing the same thing again. There's no room for this. It's bad enough. It's bad enough that we have to worry about everything that we eat being, you know, genetically modified or irradiated. And there's another one. It was the irradiated food could now be referred to as being pasteurized. Excuse me? Excuse the bloody hell out of me? To pasteurize is a specific process dealing with heat. Just because you irradiate something, which comes up supposedly with the same, you know, end result, which is killing bacteria, it's not the same. But if you actually had to label it as being irradiated, you wouldn't be able to sell it now, would you? Except to some idiot that still thinks he's living in 1950, where glowing green from the local nuke plant would be a badge of honor, you morons. Mr. Burns. There you go, Mr. Burns. And as Bob reminds me, Anheuser-Busch is the single largest consumer of rice in the U.S. How's that rice beer going for you? That's just a joke. And they actually have hops on the label, right? Or they used to. Or do they not even list the ingredients anymore because it doesn't even resemble beer anymore? Was never beer in the first place. Have you ever actually had a Budweiser, like the real thing? You know, have you ever, you know, have a Budvar? And compare, and this is where Budweiser say that they get their recipe from. That's a joke. That's an absolute joke. It's a bad one, but it's a joke. And Budvar is a pretty damn good beer. I agree with you, Bob. All right, enough about beer. We're going to take our final break for the afternoon and come back and quickly get through what was supposed to be a major subject for today. But as usual, we kind of run out of time. So stick around, folks. You're with Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice. And we'll be back right after.
Baby doll.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner, and you're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
All right. Welcome back to Foxed Up, everybody, here on the Head On Radio Network. It was very nice, Bob. Okay. Before we run out of time, I could have spent way more than a half an hour on this, but I'm going to have to try and do it in about, 10 minutes. Via a really good blog called 3E Intelligence, which you can find at the number 3eintelligence.wordpress.com. And this is a blog that deals with environmental and political issues in the European Union. And it's a very short post, but what it links to is where the guts of it are. It says, more bad news. Global economy, more carbon intensive, sinks less effective. And we're not talking about your kitchen sink. We're talking about the carbon sink, which is our system of oceans. And it says, the world is burning more carbon for each dollar of wealth created, according to a report to be published next week by the Global Carbon Project. And this is an outfit that was out to decarbonize our economy. And the oceans are losing their ability to absorb carbon, and this will lead to accelerating global warming. And it links to two different articles, one from The Independent and the other from The Times Online. Going to The Times Online. It says, rapid rise in global warming is forecast. The oceans are losing the capacity to soak up rising man-made carbon emissions, which is increasing the rate of global warming by up to 30%, scientists said yesterday. Researchers have found that the Southern Ocean is absorbing an ever-decreasing proportion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The excess carbon, which cannot be absorbed by the oceans, will remain in the atmosphere and accelerate global warming, they said. The reduced ability to absorb carbon is thought to be a result of high winds acting on ocean currents, bringing deeper waters that already contain high levels of carbon to the surface. The higher winds are themselves believed to have been caused by climate change due to the contamination of changes in the ozone layer and carbon emissions. Anyone who ever tries to simplify any of this stuff down to one or two points is a fool when it comes to our climate, which is usually the way the deniers try to go. They try and pull one thing out. Sorry, you can't do that. The scientists from countries including Britain, France, and Germany said their findings marked the first time that one of the world's natural carbon sinks had been shown to be weakened by man's own actions. Ian Totterdale, a climate modeler at the Met Office Hadley Center, described the research as an important piece of work. He said, this is the first time we've been able to get convincing evidence that a change in the uptake of CO2 by the oceans is linked to climate change. It's one of the many feedbacks we didn't expect to kick in until sometime way into the 21st century. While a reduction in absorption rates by carbon sinks has long been forecast, the discovery that the Southern Ocean is mopping up less of man's carbon emissions has come at least two decades earlier than expected. And this is the down by me, folks, down here. It says The Southern Ocean is the world's biggest marine carbon sink and accounts for 15% of all the carbon taken out of the atmosphere. Temperatures are already predicted to rise by almost 1.5 degrees centigrade, which is 2.7 Fahrenheit, by the middle of this century, without taking into account any further emissions caused, for example, by the rapid construction of fossil fuel power plants in China and India. The weakening of the Southern Ocean's absorption rates, which could be in the range of 5 to 30%, is likely to result in an increase in the rate at which temperatures rise. Okay, again, here's this thing. It keeps feeding on itself. And this is why, you know, you read from current science and you get people that say, oh, it's not imminent. Oh, yes, it's imminent. It's already happening. And every time we come up with a model, we find out, you know, 6 months down the line that the model was even too conservative. And, you know, we keep talking about two decades window of opportunity to turn this thing around. If this stuff continues within the next couple of years, that's going to be cut to a decade. It continues, this is serious, says Corinne Lecaire of the University of East Anglia and the British Antarctic Survey, two of the world's leading environmental research centers. This is the first time that we've been able to say that climate change itself is responsible for the saturation in the Southern Ocean sink. With the Southern Ocean reaching its saturation point, more CO2 will stay in our atmosphere. Since the early 1980s, the carbon sink hasn't changed. In the same period, the emissions have gone up by 43%. Dr. Lecaire led a team measuring atmospheric carbon dioxide, which found that despite this rise in emissions since 1981, the quantity absorbed by the ocean was static. Since the Industrial Revolution, an estimated 500 gigatons of carbon dioxide has been released into the atmosphere through the use of fossil fuels, cement manufacture, and changes in land use. And there's actually one of those... That's actually one of those... one of those things that is overlooked as well. Our use of concrete. Concrete is unbelievably ungreen. Almost nothing we do utilizes more fossil fuel to produce than concrete. And I mean, you have to think about the fossil fuels used first to mine it, then to ship it, then to refine it, then to send it off to the yard, then to load it up in the cement truck. Then, you know, and then not only that, the water usage. There are other ways to do the things that we do with concrete. And you only have to pick up any of the good of a selection of books on green architecture to find out that we could be using, you know, recycled tire material and other things which would do a much better job. And, well, one of the, it's being asked, what are the alternatives? Well, there are alternatives. We can, like I said, there are one of the best foundations you can build, you can use for a house is recycled tires. Doesn't crack, it's got better insulation, and you can set it together with mud, or set it together with using a whole lot less concrete, which has been done. This is something that should be taken into account. And my brother is a big time concrete pourer, and it's like a subject that I'd hate to ever have to cross with him, because he does this work as though it's an art form, and I'd hate to have to tell him that his main material for a lot of the amazing things that he's built is truly destructive on a very large scale, but it's one of these hidden costs, and I'm starting to run out of time. So, and Bob says to me, remember, the Mayan civilization at Tikal collapsed because they insisted on producing quick lime, similar to the concrete process. And you're very right there. And there's also the pollution from the gypsum content in concrete, and it just kind of goes on and on. But it's one of those things that you don't really think about, how much fossil fuel is used just to get the concrete to the building site. It absolutely kills your head in. So before we run out of time, I want to thank Bob Kincaid for producing the show today. Thank you very much, my friend. Thank you to our bloggers and our mods in the chat room. You all just kick ass as usual. Thank you to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions for the music and for today's track of the day. Great suggestion. Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. His fundraiser is still going on. It's gone slow this time, folks. You got to pick it up. So go over to whiterosesociety.org. Do the right thing, because he's the hardest working man in progressive liberal radio. Thank you to the Carpenters for everything that they do for us. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We will see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an I can be, as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment. Tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But but I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
Lone Wolf is next on your head-on radio network stations. And I'll be back tomorrow. And until then, hey, 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 get back to work.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Oh, and a jar of Jones.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. It's all-out war along the Gaza Strip as Hamas continues to fire rockets into Israel and Israel employs its air force to pounce back. This morning, a senior Hamas official vowed to wipe Israel off the map and replace it with the Palestinian state. They said they'll use rockets, missiles, and suicide bombers to accomplish the task. It's about 100 members of Fatah Islam that are being cornered in a Palestinian refugee camp near Tripoli. The fighting is some of the worst seen in Lebanon in 30 years against this militant group inspired by Osama bin Laden. Lebanese officials said the camp has become a refuge for militants training for attacks in other countries, including Iraq. The search continues in Iraq for three kidnapped soldiers missing for more than a week. The U.S. military says that they have information at least two of the three soldiers are still alive and being held captive by an al-Qaeda splinter group. Outgoing British Prime Minister Tony Blair visited the Green Zone this weekend and urged coalition forces on with his support. Another suicide bomber has blown himself up in a canteen within Iraq's parliament building today. Two MPs were killed in the attack, the second one to take place at a cafeteria inside the heavily guarded parliament building. A new U.S. embassy is set to open in Iraq this September. The Baghdad compound will be the largest and most expensive in the world. The $592 million, 104-acre compound has office space for 1,000 workers. This morning, an ambush in southern Afghanistan killed at least 25 militants. Yesterday, a suicide bomber in a popular marketplace there in the east of the country killed 14. President Bush and the NATO Secretary General meet today in the President's Crawford, Texas ranch.